Persephone, a short story by Meridelle Le Sœur.
We boarded the train at a Kansas town. Its black houses sat low amidst the fields, which were hardening and darkening now the summer was over. The corn had been shocked. The seed lay in the granaries. The earth had closed, and now the sun hung naked in the sky. All was over. The festival, the flowering, the harvesting. Dark days had come, and I was taking the daughter of Frida away to discover, if I could, the malady which made her suffer. As the train moved from the station, I watched Frida standing on the platform, her round face shadowed by the train as it passed between her and the low sun. The daughter leaned against the window for the last sight of her mother. As we left the town, she sat with her small head bent as if half broken from her body. We sped through the dying country, fleeing through the lowland, upon the fields as they lay upturned and dark, clear to the sound-swinging skyline. There fell the eerie wan light of the dying season. The train, as it traveled through this dim sea of light, became uncanny and frail, touched, too, with a bright delicacy of decay. But upon the daughter of Frida, the last light dwelt intimately as she lay half sleeping, like the fields, fatally within the cycle of the dying earth. Fatigued after the preparations for the journey, she rested in utter weariness. Her black garments hung, about to exhaust her, while out from them, like sudden flowers, sprang her hands and face. Over her great eyes the lids were lowered and gave to her whole being a magical abstraction, as if she looked eternally within or down through the earth. Only her mouth had tasted of violent fruit. It drooped in her face and turned red when she coughed, which she did frequently, dipping her head like a blind bird. As I watched her, an old pain brewed within me. A faint nostalgia which had come upon me all my life when looking upon her, or when in the presence of her mother, as if upon seeing these two women, a kind of budding came about on all the secret unflowered tendrils of my being, to blossom and break in the spaces of a strange world, far from my eyes and hands. Just when the round and naked sun hung on the horizon, three bulls standing in the dim nether light turned and loped towards our train. The black bull, I said, looked like your husband. She lifted the white lids from her eyes but did not speak. When I repeated what I said, she turned away without answering and sat with her hands in her lap, her eyes lowered, in an attitude so fatal and hopeless that I knew it was of no use to take her on this train, through these fields, past these rivers and houses, to our destination. Nothing lay in these things that could mitigate her illness. The malady was too deep. As we sped through the fields, the fantastic conquering of distance threw a magic over us, so that terrible and vast things became possible. With the dying of the sun, the train traveled through a colossal cave between the closed earth and the closed sky, and I half forgot our departure and our destination. I have always expected some metamorphosis to take place in Frida and her daughter, a moment when the distant look would, by miracle, go from their eyes, and they would reveal their nativity in some awful gesture. Nothing had ever happened beyond the natural ritual of our common farm life. But there came upon me now the old mystic credulity as I watched Frida's daughter sitting motionless, her white lids rounding over her eyes, her face glowing in the gloom. Lying there, she contained like a white seed the mystery of her origin. The marks of living were slight upon her. For from the first she seemed to carry most strongly the mark of a perpetual death. Paradoxically, I thought that because death was her intimate, I could never come nearer her mystery than to her birth on the prairies in the spring as the first white violets bloomed. for the women of the Kansas town, shading their eyes, had seen Frida coming from the prairies, walking and carrying the child. "Whose baby is that?" the woman asked her when she had come to them. And she answered, "Mine," and uncovered for them to see, bending down to them. "When was it born?" asked these women, to whom birth was a great dread. She answered, smiling, "In the night." And she went into a store and bought some goods with little flowers marked on it, on which she wrapped the baby. That year the days were bright and the earth bountiful. For each ear of corn heretofore, there were now two. The sun ripened all that had been sown. The soil was so hot, we could not suffer our bare feet upon it. Frida's lands were the most fertile of all. Her husband, Franz, the strongest man in the country, was a plowman. We saw him in the fields, dark and stocky, driving his big-flanked horses astride the black furrows that turned behind him. When he came to our fields, we were frightened by his narrow eyes buried in the flesh and by his hands matted with hair. Together, Franz and Frida plowed the fields. There was a feeling abroad that never had Frida sown a seed that had not come to fruition. It was true that for her everything blossomed. In the spring, we met her in the fields or in the thickets where the first flowers were springing alone. In the full golden light she came towards us, full-bosomed, with baskets of wild berries hanging on her bright arms. When we ran to her, she gave us gifts, berries, nuts, and wild fruits unknown to us. At harvest time, she worked in the fields with the men. When we brought her water, she straightened from the earth to loom above us, curving against the sky. A strong odor would come from her, like the odor of the earth when it is first turned. Her yellow hair would glisten round her face, and we thought it grew from her head exactly as the wheat grew from the earth. Once, when she leaned over me, I grew faint with a fertile odor, and at the same time drops of perspiration fell from her temples on my face. When her mare was seen hitched outside the houses of the town, we knew that a great natural and dreadful thing was taking place within. The house became, after that, marked, possessing a strange significance of birth. We children, while the mare waited, sat on the curb watching for Frida, who, when she came, passed in a kind of confusion of her great body, the golden hair and the strong, sweet odor. We would watch the hips of the horse with Frida upon her, disappearing down the road, past the houses of the town, out into the open plains. The child of Frida, delicate and pale from the first, was not much known or seen about. She came to town on the first spring days with her mother, riding in the wagon atop the early vegetables. She carried with her always, falling from her hands, the first white violets. It did not astonish us that she was thus privy to the first stirrings of the season, since we glimpsed her through all the year in the prairies, by the streams, or hidden in the nooks of the fragrant hills. In the fall, returning from berry hunting, she brushed past us in the chill dusk. In the winter, as we went to the frozen creek, we glimpsed her peering from the naked bush. In the spring, we saw her come by her mother with the first violets. She never spoke to us, but covered her enormous eyes with her lids, standing quite still, before us, but irrevocably hidden. On Saturdays, as Frida went about the town, she hid behind her skirts, her eyes lowered in her slim, pale face. Some women would stop in the streets and say she was idiotic because of her little head. To me, however, she had a strange grace, with her swelling body, her little head and pale face, her eyes like minerals, and her hair light like her mother's, but fine and thin as if it had grown outside the light of the sun. When Frida and her husband were plowing the fields, the girl, who grew very tall, would run in the wake of the plow singing. Franz hated her, as everyone knew, and he hated her singing. when Frida, with her horses, went plunging through the black waves to the horizon, he would leave his plow and strike at the girl. She would veer away as if only the wind had struck her, still singing. When I could run away from the town, I used to lie in the damp thicket which bordered their field and watch them, the dark man straddling the furrows, following the rumps of his horses, holding the plow to the heavy soil, Frida with her skirts on the earth, the horses turning their great eyes to look back at her, the fields lying about her with their living secrets. I watched with satisfaction these two heavy figures turning the vast earth, moving upon her stillnesses, and the slim girl, like an antelope, running in the fields beside them, singing high and shrill. She coughed beside me, dipping her little head like a bird. Now no song was in her. Outside, rapidly past us, moved the thickets, the fields, the villages. A woman stood in a doorway, half invisible in the dusk, hoisting a baby on her hip. A man came down the road with his team, the white breath of the horses flying from them in the dusk. The visible world was sinking into another sea, into a faint dusk. The daughter of Frida lay like a fallen and despoiled angel, traveling through darkness, lost to the realm of her nativity with neither memory nor anticipation. Still I watched her, trying to spin around her the stuff of reality. Did there exist for her the seed of our common life, or had she eaten only the fruit of perpetual strangeness and death? All that had happened to her, all the incidents of her life, I brought to bear upon her, but I had easier made a mark upon the wind. These things had made no mark upon her. The only mark was her mark upon life, upon all of us who saw her as a frail, lost child in the fields of her mother, as a woman ravished by strangeness. The young farm boys, still delicate with the wind in the fire, which is the mark of light and air before the fields harden them, were the only ones who came close to Frida's daughter. They often told us in the evenings that they had met her in the thickets or coming across the fields and had talked with her, but then they would say no more. The older youths found it impossible to snare the footsteps of the delicate girl. Strange to say, on the other hand, the firm and serious farm youth were convinced of her wantonness, while old ladies rocking on their porches hinted dark things of her. But one night, a man came to town from the west, driving his cattle, packed and bellowing through the deserted streets. The next morning, people said to each other, "Did you hear the cattle going by in the night?" We children thought it had been only a dream, until early in the morning, we saw on the lawn the deep prints of cloven hoofs. When I went for the morning milk just outside the town, I saw the cattle where they stood sleeping, knee-deep in the grass and mist. As I was passing, a man sat up from where he too had been sleeping and looked at me from the grasses. His beard stood out like bracken. From his low forehead, the black hair sprang. When I saw him about to rise, I ran into the town, shouting to my brothers that the cattle that they had heard and thought were only the sound in a dream had really gone down our streets and had stopped on the outskirts of the town. It came to be known that the man I had seen in the grasses went by the name of March. Saturday he came into the town riding a splendid horse. He went about the streets talking in a loud voice to the country people. He was to be seen, too, at the horse barns or at public auctions. Saturday nights he herded what cattle he had purchased, sometimes only a fine bull, to the pasture he had bought next to Frida's land. He became famous through the countryside for his pedigreed bulls. The farmers came in season to lead them to their own pastures for breeding. It happened in a very subtle way that the countryside came to think of Frida and her daughter and the man March, all three together, as somehow of the same blood. All the vital acts of farm life came to move around one or the other of them. Frida and her husband seemed intimate with the fields and the half-mystical rites of planting and reaping. It was said in wonder that Frida even brought in the lambs as they were dropped in the fields in the spring, as if she knew their time. She appeared to the women at the oven, and her appearance augured good bread. It was out their road the farmers went for the breeding of their cows. The very lay of the land with its rich dark color was strange. So was the magic they had with the earth and with natural things. Frida's daughter held a more strange mystery. She seemed half evil at times, but after she saved the life of a boy when his body had turned black, they sought her out for palliatives. So that it came about that the country people, as they dreamed over their work in the spring and autumn, were half unconsciously touched by the mystery of their tasks, a mystery between their own action and the secret of what they acted upon, by virtue of which alliance everything they did prospered and yielded in the field, the vine, the flesh. Probably because they were, in a manner of speaking, without a god, when in their dream, in a kind of blind ecstasy over the earth, within the heat, they attributed dimly to the figure of Frida, and with her the other two, an alliance and an intimacy with the virtue and the mystery, along with something sinister of the natural things of which their lives were made. After the corn had been husked, and the dreary Kansas cold had set in, I was wandering in the thicket which ran along the stream in a little curve of the fields below Frida's. The pale sun, casting no shadow, shone on the naked sod, and the land, low and flat, swelled a little to the sky. This side of Frida's, the bull stood in the wind, quite still. I had just left the earth and gone further into the thickets for berries, when out of the dying woods, with only a slight sound like a bird's, ran the daughter of Frida. March came after her. I could hear his feet strike the bare ground, and saw, as he ran past me, his black beard and hair struck by the wind as he ran into the open. She had climbed the barbed wire fence and was running in the bull pasture through the crisp grasses toward her mother's. But three bulls turned at the farthest fence and eyed her. When she turned back, frightened, March was running to her. Then she stood binding her skirts around her, her small head like a dying bird's thrown back. As she seemed about to cry out, he came upon her and bore her with him into the grasses. A young bull struck the ground with his forefeet and loped toward the sun. I ran back into the thickets. The next days I was filled with terror because of what I had seen. I dared not go upon the road to the fields or even out under the sky. The third day I came home, and there in the dusk was Frida, leaning in our door. "She is gone," I heard her say. My mother spoke from the dark kitchen. "And is he gone, too, with all the cattle?" "Yes," said Frida, and stood suffering in the dusk. After a while she walked away down the dim road. Franz came in the night, knocking and pounding at our door to know where Frida had gone. That winter she grew very old. The farmers, through the frosty moonlight, saw her wandering the barren plains. Children screamed when she approached the town. She seemed like an old woman whose time of fertility has gone. In the nights she came knocking at the doors of the village to ask for her daughter. That year the spring never came. The flowers died beneath the ground, and the fields burned in the sun. Through the hot days of spring we saw her far off, unreal in the simmering heat. We found her by the old well in our orchard, sitting sorrowing on the stones, her hair wild and white. We were young girls from school with bright ribbons in our hair. We had come to cool our faces over the black opening of the well and to cry down its sides to hear the sweet far echo answer us. But when we saw her there, we drew together, whispering and peering at her. She rose and came toward us, no longer bright and bold, but still terrible, looming above us. She went among us, as we hid our faces in our apron, stroking our hair and arms, calling each of us by the same name. It was a name I had never heard before, and I could never, after that, remember it. She peered at each of us so close that we trembled when her breath came upon us. When she turned her sad eyes to the well again, we ran from her in every direction, through the orchard, and for the rest of the afternoon watched her from behind the trees as she sat on the stones of the well, sorrowing. One evening, late in summer, as the land lay still beneath the drought, my brother came from the fields, and standing before us with the heat of the day on his face, he said, "I saw Frida's daughter walking toward her mother's." That night, the country people thought it strange that the first rains fell, plunging ceaselessly into the earth. The train stopped at a siding amidst the prairies in a sudden silence. The woman, aroused, sat up with her eyes wide open. "How far are we?" she asked in a light voice. I answered her very low, "From where?" Before she could answer, a fit of coughing shook her and the train started again. The lights were lit. She was timid about going into the diner, but at last, with vague gestures, lifting her pale hands, she put over her head an old velvet hat and rose and went down the aisle, forlorn and pale, with a kind of assaulted and pathetic dignity. I came behind her, looking at the tall body as it moved with its peculiar grace. It was like this she had come back to Frida's, with this delicate, hopeless grace, as if she had touched strange fruits and eaten pale and deathless seeds. After the summer, March had come back, driving his bulls through the street to the old pasture. He had knocked at Frida's door, and Frida had given her daughter back to him. She had gone to live in his low hut. When we passed, we saw her come out of the door to throw the dishwater over the bare ground. Her thick black skirts, given her now by the women of the town, would be pulling and dragging about her. Her little head would swirl up from them, free as a serpent's. After she had thrown the water, she would stand still, tall and hopeless, in that terrible abstraction, looking toward us with her blind, deep eyes. In the diner, she seated herself with timid, quick movements, then sat with her eyes lowered. Some arrangement of the heavy skirt annoyed her. She fingered it delicately beneath the table. She coughed, turning her head in frowning. In an effort to suppress the cough, the tears started and did not fall, but hung there, magnifying her great eyes. Suddenly, unable to bear the light, she closed them. Again the lids covered her eyes. By some bewitchment, her face became beautiful and eternal. I felt again the imminent metamorphosis, as if she were about to change before my eyes, and as always, in haste, as if to prevent a phenomenon which I both hoped for and dreaded, I spoke. "Did you see the fine bulls that ran toward our train?" She lifted her eyes and looked at me, but did not answer. "I believe the black one was the one your husband sold the upstate farmer." She was looking at me. "Did you see the bulls just before dark?" "No," she said, and the answer startled me. Whether it was the natural desolateness of traveling between places, likely to give to the form of what reality we know a vast and fabulous temper, or the sorrow of the dying year, I do not know, but back in the car I became desolate and afraid. For the remaining hours I sat opposite, watching her sleeping. I brooded over her, half expectant, as if about to startle from the mist that covered her the winged bird which was the secret of her being. I watched her with pain as she moved me with her ancient mystery as of something half remembered. It seemed to me again that a metamorphosis was about to take place here on this train going through Kansas, that the bounds of all that I had known would be shattered before me. Lying before me, she lost what semblance of reality she ever had and seemed to glow and live in other elements than I knew. What strange realms had thrust her forth to be born of her mother in the night, to put upon her the burden of endless movement through fields, upon the earth, through many days under the burden of shadowless nights, marked with a mark of strangeness, to be usurped by an unfamiliar man, to walk through unfamiliar places, and to carry unfamiliar burdens. Watching her glow before me with her terrible veiled identity, a strangeness of everything came upon me, and a terror. I felt suddenly that after this journey, in which, after all, nothing had happened, I should never be the same, that by looking upon her I was partaking of some poisonous drug, like the poison of early spring flowers and the poison of late berries. I dared not move in my terror, afraid she might stir, but she sat still, preoccupied, with her eyes hidden, dreaming of what she had never forgotten. Cautiously I came near to her mystery. She, among us all, had known that living was a kind of dying. When in these realms she had refused to partake of our fruits and so become enamored, but had closed herself in the dream which is real and from which we die when we are born. Soon now we would come upon the city glittering on the plain above the bluffs of the river. A terror of all that lived came upon me, a terror of Frida's daughter who lay as if dead, glowing already in the mineral worlds of her strange lord. Because of the terror, I said to myself, this woman is only the wife of a Kansas stockman. But who is the stockman? We saw him driving his bulls through the night, but who is he? Who is her mother? We saw her in the ripe fields and turning the soil to fertility, but who is she? All in that town came to me. All I had known passed before me, and I said, who are they? And I did not know.